podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
They might talk about humor, music, film, books, football and box sets, exercise and maybe even food. Trivia and sport, politics and health, sometimes well-being too. On the Life with Brian. On the Life with Brian.
Hello to you, a warm welcome. It's Mark here, and hello to you, of course, Chucky. How are you?
I am, well, most excellent, but I've got a bit of a cold, but I won't mention it too many times. I'm not Matthew.
Okay, well, speaking of Matthew, how are you, sir?
I'm fancy fit. I'm like, Brian, I'm not going to moan. I'm feeling good.
I didn't say I was moaning about it. I just says I won't mention it too many times, unlike you.
Well, that's twice already, so I'm keeping count.
And as well as our regulars, of course, we've got a special guest with us. And I'm pleased to introduce four-time snooker world champion, legend of the Green Bays, the Wizard of Wishaw himself, John Higgins. John, how are you doing? Thanks for joining us.
Yep, thanks for having me. Yeah, brilliant. Good. Just enjoying the sun up here in Scotland. Just enjoying it. So, John, thanks for inviting me.
Well, before we crack on, we gave ourselves darts nicknames when we had Manny on a while back, didn't we? I wonder if any of us can conjure up anything to match John's moniker of the Wizard of Wishaw. I'm going to go first, and anyone that's actually seen me pot a ball would testify that I am the Duke of Fluke. Now, Matthew, what have you come up with to describe yourself?
Well, it's not so much what I've come up with. I think Brian's come up with a couple of nicknames for me in the past, haven't you, Brian? Jehovah was one when we first worked together, unoriginally. But then he did actually come up with a snooker-related...
A ball game.
Yeah.
With pool, but...
We were famously played pool in Houston. I think we've mentioned... Long-time listeners will know about this story, but Brian, I wouldn't say he cheated, but he played dirty.
You did say I cheated, John.
I did accuse him of cheating, and I had to... an accusation I withdrew... sometime later, but
I don't remember.
Yeah, you played dirty in order to take $10 off me, which he still keeps in his wallet to taunt me whenever he sees me. So I mean, I was thinking maybe something like the gentleman, seeing as I'm such a honest and decent, upstanding player, unlike Brian. But he actually meant Chris and me Minnesota that day, as in Minnesota Slim, wasn't it, Brian?
No, the other way.
Minnesota Fats.
Club called Minnesota Fats. There's a good club in there. A lot of good friends in Glasgow. So, same name. Good name.
Yeah. So, it's going to be Matthew Minnesota Christ, I think. And, maybe the gentleman thrown in there as well, just to remind Brian about his dirty tricks in Houston.
And what was Brian's? What was your nickname, Brian?
Well, I looked all through all the nicknames, and I was killing myself laughing at some of them. So there's a lot of mentioning of winds and strong winds. So, and I thought, well, and a lot of them are related to alliteration. So I came up with two different ones, different ways. I've got a Brian Monsoon Malabar McClare. Right. And Monsoon Malabar is a way that of drying coffee beans. Right, so that was an obscure thing. But the other one I came up with was a kind of playing words was the chocolate cannon.
That's a good joke.
Before we get onto the musings, Brian, I just want to have a quick check with you. What are your thoughts about Ronaldo going back to Manchester United? And this is for you as well, John. The other thing in the news in football this week, it's been a bit of a mixed week for Celtic.
We'll have to wait and see what happens with Ronaldo. There's been a lot of excitement about it. It's going to be quite a different experience than when he was when he came the first time as a young player and went on to develop into the great football player that he is. But I'm very hoping that he's had a very positive impact so far. But it's all down to performances on the pitch, isn't it? And look forward to when that is going to happen. Hopefully it'll be a positive influence in the dressing room and on the training pitch, and be a talisman or another talisman on the during the games. I think that my other comment about Celtic is that I think they played very well in the first half at Ibrox, comfortably the better team, more possession. And they created the best chance of the game. Unfortunately, it fell to Watson Edward, who I think was thinking about B before he was thinking about A. So I think he thought the ball was a goal. I think he was celebrating. That happens quite a lot in team sports. And I think that's why I'm kind of thinking that also because of the distraction that's now been made clear, is now clear of where his future was going to be. I think he's played and he's played reasonably well for Celtic over the last 13 months, but I think his mind has been on a move for a considerable period of time. That's been settled now. Hopefully, now the squad settled and Postecoglou can get on with the plans he has in place.
Brian, just before you go any further, on the Ronaldo thing, I mean, were you there? Were you involved at the club when he was there first time around? I mean,
I was there on the coaching staff, but I wasn't.
Is he somebody you come across as an individual, as a human being?
I think he's a cracking lad, and he's a wonderful professional in what he does, but he's always done. I mean, he's one of the things, if you look at comparisons to some players at the same time, he would always he would take his holidays, but he would take a fitness coach away with him. So that not only was he doing his sunbathing part and what other leisure activities, he still worked hard when he was away. He's one of the earliest ones that I've known to have his own chef that came in to cook him sports food at home. So I think he's always had an idea in his head of that he wanted to stay in as a professional footballer for as long as he possibly could. And I think he's reaping the benefits of that now. I wouldn't be considering his biological age. I would just look at how fit and well he is.
What a gig that would be, being taken away on holiday with Ronaldo. It wouldn't have happened in your day. I can't imagine you taking a fitness coach to Blackpool or wherever you would have gone on your jollies.
Yeah, but I can cook, though.
That's true.
I'd rather take anybody, you know. So,
very true. I can vouch for that.
Do you take a chef and a trainer with you, John?
No, just the wife. Just the wife. But I was going to just ask Brian there, where would you class him there? You're talking about the pantheon, all the greats, then, Brian. Obviously, you played with a lot at Man United, and a lot of people are saying him and Messi, but where would you class him in that regard?
Well, I mean, my all-time great will never change, and for me, that's Pele, because that's sort of kind of, that's the age I am. Yeah. You've got, you got several different ones like that, Maradona, Messi. But if you're talking about comparison, if somebody asked me a question at the moment and said, should make a choice, Messi or Ronaldo, I would choose Messi, because I think that Messi's a player that I think that over his career, even though the stats might indicate that, I think Messi's been more, it's always been more of a team player and will adapt to the circumstances of the players and teams around them. So I would always pick Messi. And I like the battles we can be Messi is that as much as Ronaldo has got a wonderful physique, six-pack, whatever else, is I quite like the idea that Messi can continue to mesmerise people and have maybe not even a two-pack, you know, maybe actually even a bit of a muffin top. So I would always choose Messi.
What were your thoughts on Celtic, John? And I understand you're a big fan, and I'm assuming you probably watched Chucky as a player when you're growing up as well.
Yeah, Brian, he was one of that. That's what I was over at my mum's last night, and I was trying to look through some pictures of the story. I got my picture taken, me and my older brother Jason, which Brian knows Jason pretty well. That we got a picture taken. My uncle Matt was from Kearney in New Jersey. He was like one of the, I think he was one of the committee men or the president of the Kearney Celtic Supporters Club. And every time he came back to Glasgow, he obviously knew me and Jason. We were big fans. So he took us in and he got his pictures taken with Brian and Paul and Willie McStay and Mark Reid, Roy Aiken at the front of the old building before obviously the new stadium at the front was built, and we've got the pictures to prove it. So no, I was Brian was always one of my big heroes. I think when Brian was talking about Pelly and things like that, there, that thing that resonates with you when you're younger, that my heroes were like the likes of Brian and Paul McStay and all that. Nowadays, the players, I think it's just when you're younger that you'll just always look up to these people. So, Roy Aiken and the Celtic stars of yesteryears, they were my heroes. But the present day, just now, obviously, the COVID situation last year, it was just a horrible situation for everyone, and it was just, it probably came at the wrong time for Celtic to try and get that elusive 10 in a row, but they probably wouldn't have got there with the team that they had last year, the whole disarray, everything that's happening. And you think Edouard last year, there was talk that Edouard was nearly out the door last year, and it was Ivan Toney that was coming in to replace him. And you'd have thought that would have been a better deal, because it looked as if Edouard's head's just not been in it all year. He is your best player. And obviously he's away now. So, it's tough to take. And Rangers have got the Indian sign over us just now, without a shadow of a doubt. I think it's in the back of every player's mind that they're going on the pitch. Even Rangers are probably going on the pitch thinking, we can't lose this game. And I think the Celtic players are maybe going on thinking, we're going to have to do something special to win this game. And it's psychological in a lot of sports. So that's what I think is happening right now with the Glasgow derby.
On your Wikipedia page, it says you've got a little fancy for Everton. Is that right?
Listen, I was a massive Man United fan. I don't know. Man United was always my team. The strip was always, I think it was before Brian, it was the 85 strip. I always remember Gordon Strachan playing with Norman Whiteside when they beat Everton. I think they stopped Everton doing their treble back in 84 or 85, I think it was. But my older brother was always Everton daft. He was really friendly with a lot of Scousers, and they used to come up and stay at our house and different things. So obviously Celtic was first and foremost the love. But then I went down to the 94 and 95, 94 cup final, Brian, was it, when Everton beat us 1-0?
95, yeah.
95.
And I was down for the weekend. I was filming an episode of Big Break, and me and Jason had tickets for the cup final. And on the Friday night, I met a lot of the Scousers, and then I went to the game with them on the Saturday. And it just became all camaraderie. It was as if they were like Glaswegians as well. And I went to the game, and obviously they were all Everton fans. And ever since then, I've always had a liking for Everton.
Fantastic. So, you and Jason are welcome anytime on this show.
Yep. So, Mark was looking worried there as a staunch Evertonian. He's looking worried there, and then you dug yourself out of a big hole. Right? Basically, you know, teams.
Can I just confirm in a very, very amiable way that Jason is daft?
Absolutely, I'll second that.
You've 29 years, you've been a professional snooker player, I believe, now coming up to your 30th, turns pro at 17. As Mark said earlier, you've won 4 world titles. But what I would really like to know is, and this is the thing that I've gleaned from all this research I've been doing over the last 3 months on you, is have you learned to pack your own suitcase yet?
No, I don't think so. No, I think my mum always done it for me, and then the wife will not let me go down to tournaments now with me packing it. She's always got to have it all ironed and different things.
But so, how do you know you've got your favourite waistcoat in it, though? How does that all get decided? Do you just sit there and tell her what to put in it, and she puts it all in?
That's exactly. I just put everything on the bed and I say, so can you put that in for me?
So the second part of the part after that, what do you do when you come back then? Do you just throw it all in?
Just get it in the washing basket upstairs. And she manages to get it all ready for the next time you get away. So
how many waistcoats would you take on a trip to a tournament? Do you have like one in the reserve, or do you have one for each day? Or, I mean, what's your routine?
I would just take the one. I've got a few, but I would just take the one. And it's actually, believe it or not, it's a cursed old waistcoat, because that really tells you what you've been doing with your life and when you're eating.
Is there not a thing in the back of waistcoats for adjusting them, though? Is that not part of the beauty of it?
No, one of the ones that I get made in China.
You just undo another button, don't you?
That's what it is, because we've been going to tournaments in China for so many years that we all know it's probably a lot quicker and maybe a lot cheaper to get things made in the Far East than it is here. And every time we go out there, I would always just put my waistcoat in to get new waistcoats made, because you give a lot to charity, different things, and sign waistcoats at the end of the year and you get new ones made. And I would be going to China every year and I would just be getting it made an inch, a little bit bigger, and then the following fill up. And I wasn't actually seeing how maybe big I was getting. So that's it. I'm blaming like traveling to the Far East and getting new waistcoats made to go up with the size I was in the last few years.
I saw that, I don't know if this is right or not, but I'm going to assume it is, that one of the things you like are watches. And relating to that, do you get your watches from Mt. Cook, or do you buy antique ones?
I've never been big ones for watches buying, you know what I mean? But some of the watches out there are stunning. You're spending a lot of money just for the fake ones. So I've never for the watches.
The last time I was in Mt. Cook, I was in there with some colleagues when I was working at United, and I had this. One of the guys found out that he could get better stuff from a certain place, and they had a telephone call to meet some person. And we met this guy, and he took us all over around, backwards and forwards. And I'm a shit myself thinking, this guy, he's like, we're going to get mugged here, you know. It's an afternoon, we're going to get mugged. And he ended up taking us up this stairway and came in this big door, rattled on this big door. And it was a big, massive, big steel door opened. And then we went, and apparently this stuff in here was better snide than you can get on the street, you know. So it's quite a relief to me that we won't get mugged, you know, but I couldn't wait to get out. And when I came back out, some of my other colleagues were haggling, you know, because apparently somebody told me, you got to haggle in these places. And I said, what are you doing? So we're bartering over some watches, you know. And I said, but you're bartering over 13 pence. Just give them the fucking money. Give them more money. You know, this is these people, whatever it is they're doing, having to survive. You're fucking trying to take 13 pence off them.
Are you going to name any of these tight individuals, Brian, or not?
Get my physios.
It's like the life of Brian scene, isn't it? Now that is, you've had a few shekels, so, but no, it's true. It's as if that's the thrill of it. Now that they enjoy it as well, to pass their time as well, I suppose, so.
I was embarrassed for them, you know, 13 pence. It'd be different if it was £13, but not with 13 pence.
Nah,
easy place. I said there's no really daft things that you pick up on the tinterweb as well, or some other kind of thing that, because you're a celebrity, so you're in this website thing, telling you lots of different things about you, you know, how tall you are, your waist size and all that kind of thing, which is, I think you'd be quite happy with it, because it said it was 34, so, but one of the things that made me, because I was pissing myself laughing at it earlier today, was it says hair colour, and it said salt and pepper, right? And then in brackets, half bald. And I thought that was really unfair, because I would say, I like to think of the things in a positive way, another way around, and I like to think you were half hairy.
Well, my two brothers, they've went totally bald. I don't know if I need to whip it off. I still think I'm holding on to a little bit.
No, I'm just saying, it's like, I would say that that is something to be celebrated, not the other way around, you know. I think you should go onto that website and complain.
What website's that? Wikipedia?
No, it wasn't that one. It was some other thing that was even more famous than Wikipedia that I can't remember.
I dread to think where you do this research, Brian. You come out with some nuggets for all our guests. I know.
Well, I don't know, but sometimes you do the same things that I used to do. was make things up, you know. So I think maybe John in his time has made things up and they've now appeared as fact in the tinterweb, you know. It's like I found another kind of thing. It's all, oh, I don't know, daft little, I don't know, it's, according to some other thing that's down in or under your name and another kind of thing is that you must be a big fan of Harry Potter because your two favourite actors, according to this site, is Daniel Radcliffe and Emma Watson.
I've never seen any of the films, now Harry Potter films. Never seen one.
There were books as well, you know. You must have read a book before.
Never read any of the Harry Potters. No, I'm amazed because I love like Lord of the Rings and you know, Game of Thrones and all the different things, but I've never read one Harry Potter book. Or,
well, it's out there now. Another smear. Your favourite actor is Daniel Radcliffe.
No.
You're going to have to check your sources, Brian.
I'm just saying that's what it was. I didn't look up myself. Might look up things like that, you know. Just that when you've got to go away. You're away. I don't know how often you're away, John, but you're away. I know a lot of the time you're away, depending on your how well you're participating in particular tournaments. But what I was really interested in is, what do you do with your spare time? You know, do you read? Do you play video games? Do you do any writing? Do you watch a lot of reruns of Dallas? You know, what kind of thing? I know you like poker, and I assume that's right. Is that right, poker, or is that another made-up thing?
There was a point, Brian, I think maybe about 10 years ago or something. Every day we'd be moving away on the tour with the poker sets and with the cards, and we'd play. We'd play most nights, and it got a little bit addictive now playing those sort of things. I've not played in years. I've not played the poker in years. No, I like reading a lot now when I go away. Just like my Kindle and different things. A whole range of things. It could be fiction. It could be autobiographies. It could be anything really. Just whatever takes my fancy, because it's born, and it's. And you've got a few mates on the tour as well, probably most of the Scottish boys who you've grew up with that you maybe go for dinner and that with. And but it's not a team game. It's a singular game. So you can't be close, because you can be playing the guy the next day, and it's tough. That is tough. It's been tough now.
Have you ever been out with people you've been playing? Out for dinner with people and you're playing them the next day and you try to get them drunk so to give you an advantage the following day?
You've probably done it to me, Brian, and I've probably been so that's things. Yeah, listen, there has been times over the years when you've been away and you've maybe not been professional, you know what I mean? You're away and you've maybe had a few drinks when you shouldn't have, and different things. And you obviously regret it, different things. It's been a long career, but I think now when you're getting to the end of your career, I think it's as if you're taking it more seriously. I certainly have, probably in the last 10 years of my career. I've not won more tournaments or whatever, but I'm trying to be more professional, to try to stay involved or try to stay near the top of the game. Whereas I think when you're younger, you just think it's going to last forever. You think now you just keep playing and playing and picking up tournaments and tournaments, but and as you get older, it's not as easy. So I would probably say I'm probably a bit more professional in the last 10 years of my career.
What did you think the last 18 months or so? Obviously, you haven't travelled probably at all apart from UK. I mean, was that almost a blessing in disguise? Was it nice to not have a year where you were, you know, getting someone to pack your suitcase every few days and fly off?
Yeah, it wasn't because I was still having to travel to Milton Keynes every like 10 days. And obviously with the COVID restrictions, it was probably worse because you could jump on a plane and fly to Germany, you could jump on a plane and fly to Belgium in an hour, whereas I was driving up and down in like 6 and 7 hours to Milton Keynes. And for the Scottish boys, it was probably one of the worst years your snooker life travelling wise? Because as I said, you weren't allowed to use any of the public transport in case if you did get the dreaded positive COVID test. There was obviously, you'd probably have to self-isolate in the hotel room in Milton Keynes. So you were allowed to obviously self-isolate your own car and travel home, which I had to do in one of the tournaments when I tested positive. So in a way, obviously you were staying on like home soil, but it was tough for the Scottish lads, I would say, because we had the longest amount of hours to travel back and forth in the car.
Just thinking, Brian, you were talking about nobbling your opponents by getting them drunk the night before. You would have struggled to do that in your playing days when you've seen as everyone you were playing with and against was probably pissed anyway.
Oh, that's an absolute scurrilous thing to be saying. You know, were you out with some of them? Were you out with some of them the night before, or what?
I've met some of them since, and I know I don't think they've changed much.
And Tom McAdam and everybody been drunk here, Brian. You've got to tell me now that wasn't true.
I'll tell you the good thing about Tom McAdam, though. He's a wonderful carpet fitter.
Is he?
Yeah, that was what he was before he was before he became a full time professional football player. Right. So yeah, he lays a lovely carpet. Yeah, yeah, I can testify to that.
Right, I'll need to get his number off you, Brian.
People don't have carpets now. I thought it was all wooden floors that people have, and you can't really have your snooker table on a carpet, can you? Or can you?
It's in the carpet. It's through there in the carpet. The wooden floor you can't, because if you drop your cue, the cue can shatter, sort of thing. So it's on the carpet.
Very dated wooden floors, Brian.
I'll have maybe we'll have to find an interior designer to have one to see if I can do some research on what is de rigueur with regards to soft furnishings, you know.
Yeah, Mark, put a note in the book, Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen for the next episode.
Well, you know some, so you must be, you must watch all this stuff.
Well, that's how I fill my days. Talking of watching television, Mark, you had a question, didn't you, for which Brian actually mentioned in his last monologue there.
Yes. Now, we've ribbed Chucky about his brief and unhelpful appearance on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire as Sir Alex Ferguson's phone a friend. But John, you've actually appeared on Celebrity Mastermind back in 2010, and Brian's already referred to it. But your chosen specialist subject was
Dallas.
Now, which
you find out some stuff, don't you?
That begs the question, why? Are you a super fan?
I was a massive fan back in the day. Massive fan. I think it was just on like every Wednesday night or something back in the day. And you were
Saturday.
Was it Saturday? Was that season?
You should have been down the park underneath the chute drinking. Drinking, not watching Dallas. Or were you home in time after doing that to go to watch Dallas?
I was told to get in at 9 o'clock. So just as I was coming in, before I went in for a while, Dallas was on. So I just became just fan eye. So massive fan.
Yeah. Well, you did brilliantly in that round, scoring 13 points. And then came the general knowledge round. And this has to be one of my favourite all-time mastermind moments. You probably know what question I'm referring to here. I'll be John Humphreys, okay? What popular pizza that shares its name with a famous work by Vivaldi is normally divided into four sections, each containing different toppings? The answer is the Four Seasons. You said
four cheeses. Scrambled. Really was. At that point, it was scrambled. I think I just took in my whole surroundings thinking, I'm actually here on Bloody Mastermind. And things weren't going so well. And yeah, my mind just went blank. So,
in fairness, there is a four cheese pizza is quite common. I mean, it's obviously just not that one, but I mean, you know, I'm partial to a quattro formaggi.
It was a bad moment for me.
No, but it's not. I assume that maybe you watched Mastermind again when you were in your formative years. I certainly did. And when it was Magnus, it was asking the questions. And never would I have imagined that I would have been on that. Was it one of your all time dreams? As you know, when you first started playing snooker, that you were this was going to lead you to the Mastermind chair and another one as well, Mr. and Mrs. as well. That's another.
That was good. That was brilliant.
Was that not terrifying to be on that, thinking, well, if I don't get these right, my tea's out here, you know, and that's me done, you know.
Nobody's going to pack his suitcase.
Denise gets all the questions right and you get none of them right, you know, is that you?
Listen, honestly, Brian, funny story, because we were at my mum and dad's for Christmas dinner and we were there and I was there with Denise and Jason was there with his wife, Linda. And my little brother Joe was there with one of his girlfriends, and played the Mr. and Mrs. board game. we came last, me and Denise. So the grief I got in the car getting home, saying, I can understand maybe Grace and Linda beating us, but Joseph's only known the girl for a month. I was looking forward to getting down. I mean, obviously, it was. It was for a great charity, obviously, at Strathclyde Hospice, and my dad now had been in there a few times now before he died. And so we were going down, obviously, hoping to God that we could maybe try and win some money. And he won the 30,000. Now, it was a brilliant, brilliant moment. And we never get one question wrong. And people think it was they gave us some of the answers, because it seemed as if we were cheating, because we were saying the exact same things, but it really wasn't. It was just totally luck that we got everything right. So it was brilliant to win that sort of money for the charity.
Well, you have known each other since you were teenagers, so you might have a chance.
but you wouldn't have thought so that night, my mum and dad's house at Christmas.
Life with Brian, life with Brian, life with Brian.
Just when you're talking about the other things about, you know, comparisons and things, that with regards to me, I used to have people telling me all the time that my brother was a better player than me, and indeed my sister was a better player than me, and then my son was a better player, and my daughter was a better player than me, and I'm sure that, well, and I know what's happened, because I've heard someone telling me in your family they were a better player than you. Right, so it's just, this doesn't normally happen that way around, you know, but that's what happened. And what that leads me to is a cracking little story, which doesn't really matter if it's true or not. It's from your dad, and I'm going to start using this story now as if it's my story, because your dad knew Tommy Gemmell before he became a player, and your dad had played a bit, and the fact when Tommy Gemmell's there has a wonderful career at Celtic, a Lisbon Lion, revered by everybody apart from your dad, and he turns around and shouting over to the other Lisbon Lions, "Where's the hamper man?"
Right,
because that's what Tommy was. Apparently, he never got picked. If I get the story right,
you're right, man. It was a story my dad's always told us, that my dad was going down for a trial at Motherwell, and my dad and Tommy Gemmell just left in Craig Newton, so they just walked. You know the road. They just walked down to Motherwell, and Tommy Gemmell would say to my dad, "Can I carry your boots in, Higgy?" Because my dad had his boots in like a wooden box. So my dad says, "Aye, come down. I'm going down to get the trial." So he went down, got the trial, he got in, signed with Motherwell, like the reserves and different things. And then that day when we were at Glasgow Airport flying out for Seville, when we played Porto 2003, and all the Lisbon Lions were there, and we got chatting to some of them, and my dad was saying about Tommy Gemmell, "Where's Hamper Boy, where is he?" And the Lisbon Lions were saying, "Who are you talking about, Hamper Boy?" They said, "Gemmell, he says he used to carry my boots." So Tommy Gemmell never heard this, God rest him, until he was on the plane and all the rest of the players were slagging him off, saying, "I didn't know you were a hamper boy when you were younger." And as it so happened, we got off at Jerez Airport and we went into the toilets, and Tommy Gemmell just grabbed my dad. "Oh, Aggie, what have you been saying to them? All I got through that 2 year flight was, I'm a fucking hamper boy. Fucking hell." it was a surreal moment. It really was a surreal moment when you see the Lisbon Lions and your dad and got to obviously know Tommy Gemmell a little bit. And for him to tell us that story. Crazy.
One of your heroes, Brian?
John Stad. I didn't see John Stad play.
Tommy Gemmell, I meant.
Yeah, it's part of Lisbon Lions. I mean, as I said, I've had wonderful times with spending some time with all of them, listening to them telling stories. And they're telling me the stories, and I was like a one-man audience, and it was a fantastic experience, because it's the reason why I'm here. They're the reason why I'm here doing this now, because I fell in love with football because of them. And yeah, they scored one of the goals in the European Cup final. But and having met them and all that, they were all great, great characters and great people, and very humble as well. You know, that's a certain impression that I got from all of them that I've met. But that story I'm going to use now, as if it's fine.
I like the way you're crediting the Lisbon Lions with the fact that you're now on the Life with Brian podcast. I mean, that's, if it wasn't for the Lisbon Lions, I wouldn't be here now. I mean, that's something we can use in the future.
For me, there's defining moments. I remember that vividly, the moment that I saw that. You know, at primary school, I'm only five, sitting in the front. You all get marked standing because you're one of the smallest. You're near the front and you have to sit on the floor. There were chairs in Scotland at the time, but you just traditionally had to sit on the floor, you know, so everybody could see over your head, you know, like the cinema seats, but just because everybody was bigger. And they shot these big, massive curtains on the stage. There was this projector and a screen, and the guy just come on and switched it on, and it was the highlights of the 67 game in Lisbon. And I was smitten then. I want to do that. I want to be able to do things like that. I want to do that. That's what I want to do. So, that was the start of it, really. I mean, I've been kicking the ball around in the streets and different things, but that love for the game, and that's never changed, you know, all the way through the various different guises that I've been involved in it, until now where I'm a fan just now. I'm just a fan again, you know, and that's wonderful. And sometimes because it doesn't go your way, you don't want to be. You love it. You don't love it. It's just you consider sometimes, well, sometimes, you know, I don't really. If I didn't feel this way, that I wouldn't be so pissed off sometimes about, not just, you know, I get pissed off sometimes when teams win because I don't think that they play the manner that I think they should be playing in. So unfortunately, it has various different effects on me post matches, you know. And I end up watching the game, trying to play it. I don't know if you do that, John, you're watching snooker games and different things, but I'm trying to anticipate what's going to happen next and what should happen next. And fortunately enough, I don't watch, I suppose it's fortunate for me that I can express those things mainly at home. In the pub, when I go out to watch the football, I don't really say very much. I'm not very animated, but I'm very much involved in it. So I did get invited, you know, to an interesting establishment to go and watch the game on Sunday, but I thought it would be not such a good idea. Not because I thought that the result was going to be negative for Celtic, but I just wanted to watch it in some privacy. I might go and watch the next game. I think if the next game is at home, I'll be probably at that game. So,
you were saying to me the other day when we watched that Leeds, you know, United versus Leeds game in the pub. You know, I mean, you were saying it sort of doesn't leave you as the fact, you know, you're a fan and you've been a player, now you're a fan again. I wonder how common that is among players. I mean, you think sometimes when you become a player, you sort of lose that fan feeling, but you seem to have retained it, and if anything, more passionate than you were.
Well, I just love football. I mean, maybe it's been, see, you get a kind of little bit of a review period, didn't we, when there was no sport at all, or no, certainly no live sport on because of the situation that we're living in. And then the first the football that comes back, you watch it because it's live football, and it's the game that you, one of the games that you love, and then when the supporters are back, when you know that the game will change and has changed for me, it has changed. It's slightly different again because people don't, and then John on the PCS as well, that Gavin played recently or the start of it. I assume at the beginning of your tournaments there was no punters, John, was there? There was very few, wasn't there? There was a scattered amount, and then for the Crucible there was full crowd, wasn't there? Building up to a full crowd, there was full crowd. So must have made a difference to how your approach was and how your enjoyment of the game is, because part of that kind of thing for me, the fishing of it is the kind of, I mean, I don't know, I'm not being to snooker, but I assume that every now and again there might be some comments made from people in the audience, although it's maybe easier to pick them out and get them kicked out. I don't mean Jason, by the way, I'm talking about other people, you know, but when you go to watch football, the reason you go to watch football is to be animated and shout and scream and swear and whatever else it is. But was it a big change for you? Was it or was it just, do you just block the crowd out anyway?
Well, the thing is, we snooker, you do a lot of your practice in the club environments when you were younger. Now, I think a lot of the other players now, they maybe play at home or they play in like little academy environments where maybe the public are not coming in. It's just you and other professionals that are playing. So it is a pretty quiet environment. But then when you go on to the tournaments, it still is a quiet environment. It only really, obviously, you get the clapping if you play good shots at the end of frames and different things. But all in all, it still is a quiet environment. It's only really when it gets to the end of a match and you can feel the tension for the fans. You can feel it building up, and then when it gets close, you can feel when you start missing shots, oohs, nahs, and different things. That's what you miss, I think. Now, when you get to the nitty-gritty, an important frame and different things, that's when the crowd become important and they play like a massive part in the excitement. But at the start of matches and different things, as you say, they've got to be quiet. I know that Barry Hearn has been talking about tinkering with some of the rules, trying to make the crowd now like more engaging during the match and for them to make some noises, different things. But I don't know how you could do that. Like, it's like at the darts and different things that it just seems to be like a cackle of an atmosphere all the way through a darts match. But that's probably maybe the darts players have grew up in the pubs playing with each other, and then there's like a cackle of people shouting different things. Whereas in snooker, it's normally always been a lot more quiet and supposedly civilised or whatever. So it's a... But no, without a doubt, it's better that the fans are back in to enjoy it. And I think all the players, every one of them, now glad the fans are all back, without a doubt. It's all right with
Brian. Congratulations, John, on your 12th career 147 break in the first round at the recent British Open, which put you ahead of Stephen Hendry, with only Ronnie O'Sullivan ahead of you on the all-time list. But as remarkable as that was, your thunder was stolen a bit by the unusual scenario of two former partners being matched up, also in the first round, when Mark Allen narrowly squeaked past ex-girlfriend Rhianne Evans in what was the tensest piece of television sporting drama I reckon I've seen in months, if not years. I suppose you could call it the ultimate grudge match. Now, we're not going to pick over the state of their relationship, but what I want to know from you, John, is who would or has been your ultimate snooker grudge match?
For me,
his brother.
Yeah, I know Jason. I've never really had that sort of hatred for another player. Really, I've never had that bit in me. No, so I was like, nah, I don't know who it would be. Nah. A funny story would maybe be Alex Higgins. I mean, because the first time I ever met Alex Higgins was I was playing Jimmy White in the quarterfinals of the British Open. I think it was my first year as a professional. And I'd won something like 10 or 11 matches to get to the TV stage. I'd won a couple of matches on the TV stage, but then coming up against Jimmy White, I was playing the man instead of the table. So I thought I acquitted myself pretty well. I think I lost 5-3 to Jimmy, and then I walked off after it. And Alex Higgins was there having a few drinks, and he walked up to me. And I thought he was maybe going to say, unlucky son, you put up a good fight to Jimmy there, blah, blah, blah. And he just turned around to me and he says, I'll just tell you one thing. He says, there'll only ever be one Higgins in this game of snooker. I could not believe he'd actually said it to me and just walked away from me. So he was maybe under the influence of a few drinks. So ever since then, I thought that was out of order. He shouldn't have said that. And then, so it was a shame in a way because he was beginning to lose in a lot of tournaments and he was turning up to qualifying matches and he was starting the same rounds as we were coming in as. And then there was one altercation he had with my dad one night that I went to my bed early. I was playing the next morning. So my dad, we'd been out for a meal. So my dad, we'd go in and have a few drinks in the bar and then go up to bed. So this next morning, I've got a chap in the hotel dorm and there was this like a Louis Copeland suit. Brian, if you've been over to Ireland, there's a Louis Copeland, a good Irish tailor, I think. He made a lot of nice suits. And he said, Mr. Higgins, we've got this delivery from Alex Higgins. And I'm thinking, well, why is Alex Higgins giving me a suit? A beautiful blue suit, three-piece suit with a waistcoat, trousers. So I'm thinking, I don't know why, because I've never really spoke really two words to him really since then. So then I went down to breakfast and my dad was sitting there. So you always know if your dad's maybe had a couple of drinks the night before him. He was looking a bit sheepish and I said, Dad, I got a delivery there for Alex Higgins, a beautiful three-piece suit. He says, oh, did you? I says, aye. Why was that? He says, ah, well, he came into the bar last night and he was throwing out challenge matches to you. I'm like, what? He says, yeah, he wanted to play you for 40 grand. So my dad said, look, John's not got 40 grand, but if he did have 40 grand, he'd play tomorrow. So that's just your dad. Your dad's obviously backing you up every step of the way. But so it became like I threw a few shouts and whatever. So I think maybe Alex has maybe woke up because my dad said he had a few drinks in him. And maybe Alex has woke up in the morning and thought to himself, what did dad do last night? Maybe I shouldn't have maybe challenged young John to £40,000 grudge match. A challenge match, so he maybe gave it as a piece off him. So, but now when you think, now one of the legends of the game and different things like that, so I suppose that would be a grudge match, I suppose.
Talking about your brother, I mean, Brian said it on this podcast, I think, before, that he's claimed in the past that he was a better player than you, but he basically spent all his time watching Brian playing for Celtic or following football and going to away games and stuff. I mean, is that... Were you just more dedicated than him? And, you know, do you think if it came down to it, it would have been close between the two of you?
Who knows? We'll never know that. But that's so true. I mean, Jason, I was 12. Jason was about 15, 16. He was going out to... He got a job and he obviously just... He loved following Celtic, loved going out with his mates at weekends, loved going to... Now, music festivals and different things. And then, obviously, I was still in an age where snooker was just the be-all and end-all for the likes of myself. Obviously, I still loved watching the football and different things, but I maybe wasn't old enough to go on my own. And Jason just sort of fell away from it. So we'll never know. We'll never know. But he was certainly a good player. He really was. He was a good player.
So what you're saying is you're not as dedicated Brian McClair fan as your brother? Ultimately, that's what it comes down to.
I'll do that. But it was just that Jason got to that age where he could go and see fly in the flesh.
I mean, Brian, what about you in terms of football? I mean, there must have been an opponent or two that you laid awake at night thinking about wanting to get stuck into, or, you know, needle here and there, or was it always a case of leave it on the pitch?
No, it's more like you'd be looking forward to the game and particular games at places. And I love the atmosphere you get at away games. So the game at Ibrox on Sunday, I relished that and revelled in that. It was different in my time because there was quite a lot of away fans in both stadiums for Old Firm games, you know. And, that for me was as much as the atmosphere can be created quite well with one set of fans who are very, very passionate about their team at home. There's nothing like the friction between fans home and away, particularly in big games like that. You know, we're going to play Rangers at Ibrox, going to Anfield to play Liverpool, going to Goodison to get battered by Everton, you know, Leeds away, these kind of things. I wasn't particularly that there was any particular opponent, you know, those ones that you'd be aware of different situations that because the game was sometimes more physical, there were players with reputations that if you weren't kind of careful, you weren't looked after yourself, you could get injured. And that's just the way that it was in some situations then. So, but it's the same kind of thing, is that you may well be quite affected by teams and particular players, but that changes over time and you kind of lose your dislike for them, I suppose, and particularly when you meet them and knowing them different things. I mean, knowing that having met Ronnie Whelan recently for the first time in a long time, and we had ended up having a chat and a couple of beers together, and we got on very, very well. And he had the impression, probably quite rightly, for whatever way I was portraying and whatever things I was doing, both on and off the pitch, that I was a twat. So that's acceptable, you know. And it was quite nice that he said, well, actually, you're not a bad lad, you know. So kind of cuts both ways at times, you know. When Tony Cotton came from to be second goalkeeper at Manchester United, he came into the dressing room. Tony's a reputation as a tough lad as well as a good, very good goalkeeper. And one of the first things he said to me when we were in the dressing room that one of the things that Tony said to me. No, I wasn't then, sorry. I don't know what happened then or whatever impression things of both that period of time because we got changed next to each other in the dressing room. But when I came back to United in a coaching capacity, TC told me that I was at the top of his list of people to batter when he'd finished playing football. So he had a list of people and I was top of it. I never asked him. I didn't ask him about the details of it. This was like, I'm quite pleased about that, you know, whatever it was I had done, you know, whether it was that period of time, part of that period of time we spent is almost the season, I think, next to each other.
Oh. I was going to say that, so that wasn't from when you played against each other, was that from when you
played? Oh, no, I'm not saying it was, I didn't question about it, or it could have been. I mean, I scored my first goal, ever goal for Manchester United against Tony Cotton, and I don't know whether... Yeah, I could see myself being obnoxious on a football pitch for different reasons. Yeah. You know, I used to say some goalkeepers, I said to, you know, probably a bit unfair that when Chris Woods came to Manchester United as part of the David Moyes staff, I went in to say hello to them all, and I said to Chris Woods in front of the other staff and all that, could you just turn round a minute? And when he just looked at me, you know, and I said, "Okay, just turn around a minute." And he turned around, and I went, "Oh, I recognise you now." Which probably,
probably put Chris Woods, Chris Wood's on that list of people that want to batter you. As
well, there's this little devil in me that I've got this temptation, and most of the time I couldn't resist it, and I just accept whatever the consequences are or are going to be. I do tend to resist that when I'm in pubs, you know, any random people, you know, because I might actually get melted, as they would say, and the rest of Scotland, you know. But certainly when it came down to my teammates and colleagues and things, I had no problem about just saying it, you know, because I just wanted to. I like to have to be amused every day, John. I like to have a laugh at the joke. I'm sure you'll have plenty of laughs and jokes with your the players who you both like and probably don't like so much. You get a bit of banter between you, particularly if the game goes back to that thing. You've got to spend an awful lot of time with each other. Maybe you spend more time with them and you do in hotel rooms and restaurants and various other scenarios. So for me, it was about entertainment, and a lot of the entertainment was coming from my own imagination. So, and there's several events that I'm mystified by that I did to Alex Ferguson that would we should negate the fact that I ended up spending 25 years really in his employment, you know, because some of the things I did and attempted to do were sackable offences, both as a player and as a coach. So,
is that because you didn't get found out, or you
Some of them were pretty blatant, like right in front of a match. There's some pretty blatant stuff there. So
there's truth in the rumour that you were one of his favourites then, obviously, otherwise you'd have been shown the door.
I think that part of it, you analyse it, you think, well, how did you get away with it? Well, the only way I got away with it really was I was of use. Whatever that use was, you know, there's as much as we all like to get treated the same, we don't all get treated the same, you know, and that probably became more kind of highlighted to a number of occasions because of when Eric came, you know. I think that became more of a very much, as I say, that big spotlight on Eric and the things that Eric did. Not that he was being mischievous, sort of playing daft jokes that I was, but just that. He was treated differently. That was probably the first real occasion of that everybody could see. Maybe I got treated differently. It's you can't see from the inside, you know. So,
Mucklass mailbag. That sack of yours is positively bulging at the seams again, Matthew. What's inside?
Well, you can see from there. Right, let's have a look. And guess what? Guess who's at the top of the mailbag? It's Cumbrian Dave, as reliable as ever. And he asked you, Brian, were any of your former teammates any good at snooker?
Yeah. Well, not even just that. We good at snooker. Alex Ferguson was a good snooker player. He was breaks of 70 and 80. So he's always had certainly the whole time he was managing Manchester United, he had a snooker table in his home.
Yeah, he famously had that snooker table in his house.
He was a very good player, yeah. There was a period particularly when I was at Celtic, I used to go and play snooker in Coke Bridge all the time, nearly every week.
Is that where you picked up your dirty tricks?
Yeah, probably, yeah.
Yeah.
Was that called tactics, you mean?
Well, Some would call it tactics.
Yeah, there was a few of them were decent. Yeah, they say that. What I remember is Alex Ferguson was one of the ones that was.
What's your highest break? Can you remember?
The 20s, I think, maybe 30.
Yeah. Did you ever come across any talented snooker playing footballers, John, in your time, or you never had the privilege?
Frank McDougall, Brian.
Oh, Frank. Yeah.
Frank was pretty good at snooker. I played him in an exhibition in Bury one night. And I'm thinking, how do I know that guy's face? Now, because he'd put the beef on maybe a little bit, but obviously I'm thinking, I know that guy's face for somewhere. And obviously because he was a Scourge of Celtic and Rangers when he was playing with Aberdeen at that time, wasn't he? Was it 85? Right. He was a great scorer. But got chatting to him in that aye, lovely fella. Bit of a head case, but a lovely fella. So, he's pretty good. I can always remember I was playing at the Masters. I think I was playing at Sullivan in one of the finals, I think it was. And I think he was pretty friendly with Gary Neville and David Beckham. I think they turned up one of the rounds. I think he was quite friendly with them. But no, I've not played too many. Not played too many.
I think snooker is one of those sports that's sort of synonymous with football, isn't it? Like golf as well. It's one of those, obviously you've got a lot of time to kill in the afternoon if you're not in the pub, or you could still be in the pub playing snooker. You know, it's one of those things that maybe not these days, of course, but, you know, back in the old generation, snooker and golf seem to be something that footballers turn to for a bit of relaxation, I think.
I think maybe nowadays they're away in the private jets, maybe flying.
Yeah. Well, I think PlayStations and the like are taken over from the snooker table.
Snooker and the bookies and different things.
Okay, and the second question out of the mailbag is from Craig LG, and he asks, here's one for you, talk about putting you on the spot. In what song or book does Brian think the main character could have been based on him? And what character in song or fiction would have liked to have been?
Character in fiction?
Yeah, so what song or book does Brian think the main character could have been based on him? And what character or song in fiction would you have liked to have been based on him?
Main character in fiction, I'm going to choose Gandalf.
Gandalf. Grey.
I'm not sure which way I'm yet. I'm not quite sure what colour it is at the moment, but yeah, maybe Gandalf the Grey. And what was the other part? Sorry, Matthew.
Well, a song. So, what song or book does Brian think the main character could have been based on him? So, I mean, a character in a song about somebody, I suppose.
There's never been a song or a book that's been written that's been that boring.
No. So, okay, then. And so, the second part of his question is which song or fictional character would you have liked to have been
Gandalf?
Yeah,
so that's go for Gandalf the Grey.
And in terms of song,
a song that I would like to.
Well, a character in a song.
In a song. The card cheat and the Clash.
Very good.
Unfortunately, he gets shot.
I'm thinking Hustler, something like that as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
You're looking about like that thing, Brian. What is that? That musical? Was it the one with the good-looking fella? Who was the musical? Who's the girl? Who's the girl that?
I look like a girl.
Did you? Who was the duet they were singing? What do you call her? She's not the best looking, but there's something about her that's quite good looking.
It's a musical.
What was the film? Oh my god!
It's like a game of charades.
What's this? You're not thinking Lady Gaga, right?
Lady Gaga. Who was she? Who was she playing opposite? Who was the guy?
Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper. There's a Bradley Cooper look about you today, man.
I'll say that. Yeah. Okay.
Add that one to the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could.
John, I strongly urge you go get an eye test before your next tournament, mate.
we're not going to let you off the hook there, John. I mean, any fictional character that you'd like to have been based on, or yeah, I mean, who do you?
Yeah, well, that would do me.
Oh, of course.
was that not real? I thought Dallas was a documentary.
Yeah, that must have happened there. Two bottles of champagne a day, that man done apparently now before getting into filming. That must have been good.
Okay, that's it then. We've cleared the table, ready to rack up another day. A big thanks to John for coming on the podcast. John, thanks very much. I hope it's been okay.
No, I loved it. Thanks very much for having me on. Cheers, Ed.
Brilliant. Good luck for the season. We'll be keeping an eye on how you do. And hopefully another world title in Sheffield next May.
Well, here's home. We'll give it a best shot. Give it a best shot.
Brilliant. Chockey, Matthew, a pleasure as always.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Cheers, Brian. Thank you. Cheers, Matthew. Cheers.
No problem.
Cheers. Great. Thanks for listening. Keep subscribing across all the main podcast platforms, including YouTube, Apple, Spotify, Google, etc. And follow us on Twitter at Brian McClare Pod for news of future episodes, mailbag entries, and whatever else you want to send our way on the internet. That's it. We're all off for a game of killer. See you soon.
Life with Brian. Talking films or music. Life with Brian. Talking TV and food. Life with Brian. Talking trivia and exercise. Life with Brian. It's different every episode. Life with Brian. Talking politics and football. Life with Brian. It's different every episode. Life with Brian. Life with Brian.
Sports Social Podcast Network.